are tuned to KBBI, AM 890. Homer, the time is 9:02 a.m. It is time for the coffee table. Back after a long absence, welcome back to the coffee table, our live call-in public affairs program. I should tell you right now, I'm your host, Kathleen Gustafson. Before we get started, I want to remind you that the views expressed on the coffee table do not reflect the views of KBBI, its staff, its board, or its volunteers. The opinions are those of the speakers alone. In the studio right now with me is Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly Member Willie Dunn, one of the representatives for Homer. Welcome, Willie.
Hey, thank you, Kathleen. It's really great to be here. Honored to be on the new coffee table. I know it's been a long hiatus, and I'm glad the coffee table's back again. And I would also like to see that the views that I'm expressing here today are my own, don't represent the borough or the borough assembly.
All right. All disclaimers have been made, and I expect we will be making them again. I will not be calling for your calls as yet. We have some things to get to. One thing I need to tell you is that KBBI contacted and asked for input and participation from the borough, from the Alliance Defending Freedom, who is defending the borough in its invocation lawsuit, also to borough attorney Colette Thompson, and to many people involved in the invocation lawsuits. All of them either did not respond, or, for instance, attorney Colette Thompson responded very politely, saying that the borough would have no comments because of ongoing litigation. Which leads me to my first question. Very few people that I contacted were willing to talk to me at all. So what are you doing here, Willie Dunn?
Well, you know, it's been an interesting road path, and I have had my run-ins with whether I can speak or not, and I have gotten clarification from the borough and from the courts that I am free to speak. And, you know, there are some things I can't talk about, the ongoing litigation, but I have been involved with proposing ordinances and resolutions that I'm looking for solutions to this issue. So I can speak about those freely.
Okay, great. Also, you can't speak about anything the borough discussed in executive session. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Because I have some questions about representation and cost, and there are some things that that I will not be able to dig out of anybody because they were discussed in executive session.
Well, and some of the cost information is public information, and I can speak freely about that. Anything that's public information, yeah, we can talk about, absolutely.
Okay, so the first thing I would like to do is backtrack a little, I'm sorry to say, because there is so much going on. It starts in March of 2016 when people are talking at the assembly questioning the necessity of the invocation. The first ordinance to remove the invocation comes in May, a year ago, by Assemblymember Blaine Gilman, who is no longer on the assembly. So I spoke with one person who did agree to speak to me, was Eric Glatt. Eric Glatt is an attorney with Alaska ACLU. He will identify himself on the recording. And he was willing to talk to me about the suit Hunt, Fontana, and Boyer versus Kenai Peninsula Borough. So I'm going to play that for you now. This was a discussion we had last night.
My name is Eric Glatt, staff attorney with the ACLU of Alaska, representing the three plaintiffs in the case regarding legislative invocations before Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly meeting.
I know that last week there was a status hearing, and so can you update us as to what was supposed to go on there and what happened?
Oh, the status hearing, the first time both sets of attorneys, so the attorney representing the borough and the attorneys representing the clients came before the judge and agreed on the trial date and the briefing schedule. It did not delve into the substance of the issue.
Right. So the trial date is set for February of next year. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
What do you expect will happen between now and the trial date? There will be motions. You'll be sharing information. What's going to happen between now and then?
Indeed. Yeah. Between now and then, we will engage in discovery to establish all of the facts that everybody agrees upon, and we may decide at some point that we have enough facts that are undisputed that we might not even need a trial. If both sides agree to all of the basic facts and what the underlying issues are and believe that the law is already clear on that, we could file a motion to ask the judge to resolve those questions before even reaching a trial. The motions that you often see in a case like this that would resolve it without a trial would be a motion for summary judgment.
First thing I wanted to talk to you about was what was happening this week, but I feel like we need to roll back and help give people some sort of timeline. So March of 2016, meetings, questions about the invocation's necessity start coming up. In May, Blaine Gilman introduces an ordinance to remove the invocation, but it doesn't even make it to a vote. Then the assembly decides to make the invocation open. August of 2016, we're getting almost to you. August of 2016, Iris Fontana's invocation representing the Satanic Temple happens. The very next meeting, three pieces of legislation are introduced. One is to eliminate the invocation, one is to have a moment of silence, and the other is to pass a restriction on who can give the invocation, other members of established religious groups, or a person representing any institution as a chaplain, for instance. And that's when we first see the ACLU in this story. Can you tell me what was it that made this a case for the Alaska ACLU, a case that you would even want to take? I would imagine that you get lots of petitions for representation.
That is true. So this question about religious invocations in the Kenai is really about how citizens and residents can participate in local government. Obviously, the Kenai Peninsula Borough isn't obliged to have invocations, but once it decided it wanted to open its meetings with invocations and invite members of the public to give those invocations, most Americans would agree they would want their government to treat them all the same and to give everyone the same opportunity to participate in that way in local government that they would anyone else. One of the features that makes our democracy so resilient and rich is the fact that we have a foundational principle saying that it's not the government's business what kinds of religions to support and promote and which kinds to denigrate and try to suppress. When the Kenai Peninsula Borough decided rather than, say, have a moment of silence or rather to do away with invocations altogether or rather just to continue the practice it had, which was to let anyone who was a resident give an invocation, it decided to impose a restriction that violates these core principles, both about religious tolerance. But, you know, I think when we talk about local government, it's really where our neighbors come together to enact this really great institution of self-government. And the idea that features of this self-government are going to close the door on some people and open it up to others is really offensive to the ideals I think we all hold dear.
The suit has been remanded to state court. So does that mean it's the Alaska Constitution that judges will be looking at to see if this is constitutional?
Because That's correct.
It would seem to me that I think that Alaska citizens actually enjoy greater constitutional protections or more constitutional protections. For instance, we have things like a constitutional right to privacy. There aren't amendments that give us equal representation and equal rights. It's Article 1, Section 1. So does that change what your arguments are?
I wouldn't say it changes the argument so much as those are the arguments we're relying on. So every state is free to offer its residents greater civil liberties or civil rights than the federal government provides. Obviously, a state can't say, in our state, we have less.
Right.
So for all of these issues, whatever the federal standard is becomes a baseline. But you're correct. In Alaska, we have even more robust protections on a number of grounds that give Alaskan citizens and residents even greater protections than they have under the federal system alone.
And so if it is decided in favor of the borough, then it could still again become a decision for federal judges. Is that correct?
Well, if the Superior Court decided against us, and I don't anticipate they will, but if they did, really the next course of action is to present that issue to the Alaska Supreme Court to have the last word on what the Alaska Constitution requires.
Do you have experience with the Alliance for Defending Freedom? Have you met them in court before?
I personally have not, but the ACLU has in other jurisdictions across the country.
I do want to thank you for speaking with me, for your input, and to help me clarify all of this.
our form of self-government really is not self-enacting. It requires everyone to participate and to participate thoughtfully. So I think if people step back from some of the particulars that may distract them and just look at those fundamental principles, it's very clear that what the Kenai Peninsula Borough has set up as its policy just doesn't reflect the values I think most of us all share.
And so the last thing I want to ask you, this suit, the people you're representing, their numbers have grown. First, it was just Iris Fontana who gave the Satanic Temple invocation, and Mr. Hunt who gave a non-aligned invocation, and then Elise Boyer, a woman from Homer who is Jewish who wanted to give an invocation, was refused because, not that she wasn't part of an established religious group, because she is, but because they didn't have an established place to meet. Give me some understanding. Do you expect more people to join the suit?
When we filed the suit, we were representing both Lance Hunt and Iris Fontana. Both Lance and Iris were permitted to give invocations before this policy was enacted, and they were each denied the opportunity to give another invocation after the policy was enacted.
I see.
And then, as you mentioned, Elise Boyer joined the suit, and Elise identifies as Jewish, and she's a member of a small-ish Jewish community in Homer, but because they don't meet the requirements of the policy, for example, they don't have a synagogue with a rabbi who leads them in a formal religious organization, well, she doesn't qualify, and she's not permitted to give an invocation. And it's exactly the kind of restriction that this policy enacts that I think most people, were they in Elise's place, you know, would feel really offended, and rightfully so. And I don't think that's very hard for people to understand. If you're a member of a religion that simply doesn't have enough adherence in your local community, and in the Kenai Peninsula Borough, there are lots of small communities, that if you're an adherent of a religion that simply doesn't have the numbers to be formally structured to the degree required by the policy, to have a door closed in your face is simply un-Alaskan. So to tie local participation with how well established your religious association is, it inherently keeps people out. And I think most people would agree that that should happen to our plaintiffs just as it shouldn't happen to them.
Then that was Eric Glatt, who is an attorney with Alaska ACLU. He is representing Hunt, Fontana, and Boyer in their suit against the Kenai Peninsula Borough. Now, the Alliance for Defending Freedom is representing the borough, or defending the borough in that suit. And so they were not interested in coming to air or issuing any sorts of statements or any sort of thing, which is not uncommon. So I did go to their website so that I can tell you that they are faith-based, Christian-centered legal defense group. That statement on their website is for advocacy. It is not enough to just win cases. We must change the culture. And the strategy of Alliance Defending Freedom ensures lasting victory. Two of the cases they are involved in right now that is on their that are on their website, they're representing a Colorado baker who wants to limit the people that he can, clients that he can accept. And also they're representing a California organization that offers pregnancy consultation services. They're arguing that they should not have to, in their offices, they should not have to tell people that they aren't a licensed if you aren't a licensed medical clinic, you shouldn't have to tell people that. Also that they don't have to make people aware of any other options in the state for instance, abortion. So the Alliance for Defending Freedom, Brett Harvey is the name I'm seeing on the listings for them, and they are the people who are defending the borough. So, Willie, let's get back to this timeline, and in a moment I'm going to get to you. You gave an invocation last week in Seward.
That's right.
I would like to hear anything that you have to add to that.
Well, you know, one of the interesting and, you know, somewhat confusing things is that when the borough was sued, Hunt versus KPB, and then defended by ACLU, the borough entered into a contract with Alliance Defending Freedom to provide defense. the Borough Assembly had no input on that. We didn't review the contract. We weren't made aware of it until after it was signed. And one of the stipulations in the contract was what I considered restrictions on free speech. It was interpreted that as a Borough Assembly member, I would need to submit anything I wrote or presented to the media to both the Borough and to the Alliance Defending Freedom for their approval, which, as you might expect, rubbed me the wrong way. However, I did that reluctantly, and then I was told that that the Alliance Defending Freedom did not approve of a opinion piece I'd written. So that started my journey into the legal system.
Which is when your suit was filed. I want to check to make sure he is on the line. Attorney John McKay is representing you in this suit. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So, Mr. McKay, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, and thank you for joining us. So the first thing I would like to do is ask you just a basic legal question, because in my conversation with attorney Eric Glatt from Alaska ACLU, he mentioned that they might apply for summary judgment, and I neglected to ask him to explain what that means. Can you explain to people what summary judgment is?
Sure. That's just a way of, you know, sort of cutting to the chase and getting a case resolved where the only issue is, what is the law? Because it's the judge's job to say what the law is. If there's a question about facts, that has to be decided by the trier of fact. Sometimes that's the jury, sometimes it's the judge, but that happens at trial. But if we're really only talking about what's the law here, and everybody either agrees on what the facts are, or they say, you know, for purposes of this, we're going to assume that the facts are this, then all that's left is a question of law, and the judge can decide that, and that's called summary judgment.
Thank you. And I do want to get us back to Willie Dunn's case. That's what you're here to talk about. Why is Assemblymember Dunn's case a case you want to take? Because attorneys don't take every case that passes over their desk.
Well, that's true. Learning when to say no is useful sometimes. I think that I was interested when I didn't know Willie Dunn before this, and so that's been that's probably a good enough reason to take the case. It was a pleasure meeting him, and I think, you know, the interesting thing for me in this was sort of unique situation, certainly one that I've never seen, where the lawyer representing the borough, the law firm, has a contract that says that, you know, nobody can talk about this. It's a free speech issue, something that I have been involved in and been interested in for many years during my legal practice in Alaska. I think the idea that a borough assembly member is being told that he can't speak out on an issue that's of significant importance to his constituents and, you know, obviously the whole Kenai Peninsula, unless he gets it approved in advance, is an obviously unconstitutional restriction on his free speech rights.
I would like to ask you, Willie. You had to ask permission to the borough. That's part of the Alliance for Defending Freedom's, one of their rules that you have to, or anyone from the borough commenting on their suit, needed to submit their public commentary for approval by the Alliance for Defending Freedom, right? That's where we were.
Well, yeah, the contract that the borough entered into, that is one of the requirements. You know, I disputed whether that applied to elected officials or assembly members, and as I said, I reluctantly submitted my written opinion piece to them, and when it was denied and I was told that I could not or should not publish it, that's when I requested some legal assistance and we filed a lawsuit.
But then, when the lawsuit was filed, the borough said you had spoken in error and they had not told you you couldn't.
Yes, well, that was their
publish.
Yeah, that was their statement in court. You know, the way I see it is that they reversed course. That at one point they told me that you know, things would need to be submitted for review and approval, and then they reversed course and told me that I was free to publish anything. However, there's still a question remaining over whether that would result in violations to the contract, and it's still unclear. And I was mostly looking for some clarity. I did get some clarity in that they say I'm free to publish and speak on on this issue, but there's still some lack of clarity about the whether the contract applies to elected officials.
Well, this is my question, and it's probably for you, Mr. McKay. If the borough says they did not tell you you could not publish, and of course that piece has been published in the Homer News?
It was published in the Peninsula Clarion.
Peninsula Clarion.
And it was published online by both the Homer News and the Homer Tribune.
So if that has happened, then why is this suit still going forward, Mr. McKay?
Well, basically, the borough still has this policy, and they still have this contract. We're glad that they came around after Mr. Dunn filed suit and changed their position, but the fact is that it remains. There are some, and if they just said, fine, you know, we understand, you know, we actually really mean it, we aren't going to apply this to borough assembly members. We even said to them, if you can agree, you know, not to apply this to borough assembly members, then, you know, we can drop the suit, you know, we can come to an agreement to drop this. But instead, you know, they insisted, you know, they rejected the offer to simply agree that it doesn't apply to borough assembly members. Their attorney in court has said, oh, no, we never said this. At the same time, Mr. Dunn says that they did, but going forward, he also says, as long as he doesn't say too much or the wrong thing, there won't be an issue. Mr. Dunn shouldn't have to worry about, you know, what's too much or what's the wrong thing. They've said that this could have financial consequences for the borough, but that's the borough's problem, not Mr. Dunn's. But Mr. Dunn is an elected official of the borough. I think he cares about if there are going to be harmful consequences to the borough. And, of course, he also shouldn't have to be put on the spot as an assembly member who is arguably not doing his duty as an assembly member, violating or causing a violation of the contract, when, in fact, that contract simply shouldn't apply to him at all.
You know, and it is my duty to speak out and communicate with my constituents, whether that's one-on-one or through you know, public media, radio, newspaper, and such. So to be restricted in that, I feel, prevents me from doing my job.
I will say that I was out of town January, February, and March of this year, and the Peninsula, I have relied heavily on the Peninsula Clarion's reporting to bring me up to speed, and I would recommend that anyone search Elizabeth Earle's writing on the subject on the Peninsula Clarion website. She also has a YouTube video up breaking down this very timeline, which helped me fill in a lot of blanks. The next thing I want to talk about, I do want to ask Mr. McKay, you have a status hearing when for this suit?
Well, actually, there's been a change almost as we speak. The borough has filed a motion to dismiss, basically asking the same question you have, is why are we continuing the suit? We tried to resolve it. They didn't, and so, as cases do, it's going on. The judge set a status hearing actually for today, but then took it off and instead set a hearing on for July 11th on the motion to dismiss the case and a motion for preliminary injunction. So there's going to be a hearing now in July on the questions about whether this case should proceed and on what terms.
Well, I want to thank you for calling in today. If you can stay on the line as long as is good for you, we would like to probably consult with you later on in the show. Is there anything that you would like to add right now?
No, I think other than one thing I'm glad about is that it's unfortunate that they ever adopted a policy like this. It's actually kind of hard to imagine. It seems like it's a lesson for public officials to maybe. It's hard to imagine that anybody in the Kenai Borough, if they thought about it more, would ever want to enter into a contract, if you think about the terms of this, that would be applied to keep a borough assembly member from talking about an issue of importance to the borough, to even enter into contracts that would purport to do that. Yeah, I'm glad that the borough has changed course and recognizes that assembly members should be free to speak. And if we can come to an agreement that formalizes that would be a good thing for all, I think.
Okay, thank you so much. And for everyone listening, this is the Coffee Table Program. I'm Kathleen Gustafson. That was attorney John McKay representing assembly member Willie Dunn, who is live in the studio today. Before we open the phones, there's one more two-minute recording that I would like to play for you, because assembly member Dunn, you gave the invocation last week at the Seward meeting. So before I ask you how that came about, I would like for people to hear it.
We will now receive an invocation offered by Willie Dunn from Last Frontier Freethinkers. You may either remain standing or be seated. No one is required to participate.
Thank you. With deepest respect for the diversity of cultures, religious beliefs, and non-beliefs in our communities, and with regret for the borough residents whose request to speak before us have been denied, I offer the assembly tonight this secular invocation. First, I suggest that we not bow our heads, that we look straight ahead towards the public assembled here to participate in the legislative process of our local government. Let's open our eyes widely to the realities that confront us while doing our best not to lose sight of the ideals of what we can achieve. Let's also open our hearts to the common good of all people in our communities by respecting the inherent dignity and worth of every person. In order to achieve the greatest good, it's critical that we also maintain open minds, that we honor and respect the rights of all. Let us consider the benefits provided by differing perspectives, and let us question assumptions that may obstruct our path to progress. Come here tonight to make important decisions for the benefit of our borough, our communities. Since we serve the public and since we serve all borough residents, I ask that we put aside our personal biases, that we put aside our preconceived ideas, that we consider not only spoken testimony and written public comments, but that we also consider sufficiently the multitude of facts and figures available to us in order to make impartial and informed decisions. While faith-based decision-making may prove to be of great value in one's personal life, I suggest that as representatives of all borough residents, we have the ability to be not limited by certain beliefs. I ask that we rise to the challenge of honoring the values of others, of weighing the evidence available to us, and making balanced, impartial, evidence-based decisions when it comes to the governance of our municipality. Thank you.
Amen.
So that was Willie Dunn's invocation at the Seward Borough Assembly meeting the 18th, last Tuesday?
That's correct. That was last Tuesday.
And that was Assembly President Kelly Cooper making a disclaimer before the invocation. That disclaimer is borrowed from the state legislature. Is that correct or no?
No, that's part of our borough policy.
That is your policy.
And that's read
now
at every invocation.
And has it always been?
No, that's since the adoption of the new policy this year.
I see. First of all, I want to tell you the number to call, opening up the phones, is 235-7721 or 1-800-979-5224. If you have a question for Assembly Member Dunn or any comments to make, we would love to hear from you. But if you are asking yourself, thinking to yourself, I listen to borough assembly meetings on KBBI, but I didn't hear Willie's invocation. I didn't hear Iris Fontana's, for that matter. I want to tell you, it's our practice at KBBI to bring the meeting to air when the roll call is underway, not before, and the roll call happens after the invocation, which means that we have the whole recording because we take it from a different channel. We don't take it straight from the air. And so we have the recordings of everything that happens beforehand, which leads me to a lot of things I hear before the meeting goes to air. I hear all the chatter when people are coming in, when assembly members are taking their seats, when they're talking and joking, and it's a very friendly, collegial atmosphere. Seems to me, Willie, can you confirm that?
Oh, yeah. It is very friendly and for the most part, and I think being part of a nonpartisan body, the borough assembly is nonpartisan, and that, I think, is very helpful, and we can get along as individuals and agree to disagree, even though we have very different beliefs on things. So, I wish that were true in other parts of government. However, things like this issue have become very divisive on the assembly, but we can still be friendly with each other.
And you have a list with you of who is approved, but first, can we consult the rules as to who can give an invocation?
Sure. The policy that has caused a lot of the issues, lawsuits, divisiveness, expenses to the borough is a policy that was adopted recently, and the meat of it says the invocation shall be delivered by an appointed representative from an association list developed through a policy The assembly president allows a private citizen to solemnize the proceedings of the assembly, and it's important to remember that the invocation is not for the public. It's for the benefit of the assembly to accommodate the spiritual needs of public officials, according to this policy, and it's based on who can give the invocation. Religious associations with an established presence in the borough that regularly meet for the primary purpose of sharing a religious perspective, or chaplains who are for fire departments, hospitals, etc. So that seems to be the crux of it. And
who's on the list?
Well,
how many organizations?
Right now, there's 8 religious associations are on the approved list. So throughout the entire borough, I don't know if you want me to read through the list of approved associations, but includes
we're in the business of dispensing information here. Who's on the list?
The Alaska Christian College, the River Covenant Church, the Alaska Bible Institute, the Birch Ridge Community Church, the Church of the Nazarene, Peninsula Grace Brethren Church, the Soldotna Church of God, and then the last association approved is the Last Frontier Freethinkers, and that's who I gave the invocation on behalf of.
It seems, I just have to say, after playing your invocation and listening to it a few times to prepare for this, it seems as though you are trying to make a point, Assemblymember Dunn. And also, because if I read that list, the Alaska Freethinkers, the Last Frontier Freethinkers, they are the only approved group that doesn't have an established meeting place, like a church? I mean, what makes them different other than that they are not a Christian group? Every other one is. Is that correct?
Yeah, the others are all Christian churches or Christian educational institutions, but the Last Frontier Freethinkers qualifies because they meet regularly for the primary purpose of sharing a religious perspective.
So an organization doesn't need a building that is their meeting place. They just need to hold regular meetings? Because this just makes me wonder about why Elise Boyer was rejected.
I don't know why her request was denied, but all I have to go by is the formal written policy here that says that they have to have an established presence in the borough and regularly meet for the purpose of sharing a religious perspective. So that seems a bit subjective, but that's up to the assembly president to decide. And so far, I'm aware of 4 individuals that have been denied the request to give an invocation. 3 of them are plaintiffs in the lawsuit.
Okay, if you have any questions for Assemblymember Dunn or any comments, please call 235-7721 or 1-800-979-5224. And I'm going to get back to my timeline. When we last left this extensive timeline, in October of last year, the ACLU was issuing a statement of their intent to sue, which brings us to November, when Gary Knopp, Assemblymember, introduced an amendment to get rid of the invocation restrictions. Following meeting, the policy was reinstated, because it did. They did remove it at that meeting in November. At the following meeting, you were not present.
That's correct.
I remember this because I was filling in for the Morning Edition host, and I called you because I looked at a news story and said, can this be right, and called you to clarify.
That's right. I, unfortunately, was out of town, a family event that had been planned many months ahead, and I missed that meeting where it was reconsidered.
Right. So they had a call for reconsideration, and then the invocation restrictions were reinstated.
Right. The proposal to remove the restrictions failed on a 4-4 vote when I was not present.
Yeah. We are almost to the end of last year, but there is a caller on the line. Caller, do you read me?
I do.
Well, hi. Go ahead. Welcome to the coffee table. Thank you for calling.
Thanks. I have a question for Assemblymember Dunn. You said just earlier in a few minutes ago that the invocation was primarily for the assembly members' religious needs. My question to you is, if that is what the invocation is primarily for, then why subject a room full of people to that invocation when you guys can simply meet in a private room off to the side, then come in and do your roll call?
So I can direct that to your attorney, or if you're, go for it.
Sure. That's a really good question. Thank you for asking. It's something that I had brought up in some of my proposals to change the ordinance or change the policy in the past. the fact remains that the borough code requires an invocation. It places it on the agenda at the beginning of the meeting. So until that borough code is changed, we're required to do that as part of our public meeting. But I agree with you that it's not necessary to be part of the public portion of the meeting. However, that requires a change of code, which requires an ordinance, and so far the majority of the Assembly has not voted in favor of doing that.
So does that, do you feel like that addresses your question and answers it?
Yes, it does.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Thanks.
And so back to our timeline. Also, anyone else who would like to call, comment, or question, the number is 235-7721 or 1-800-979-5224. So back to December. Now we've made it to December, and the ACLU sues the borough representing Hunt, Fontana, and Boyer. And the borough contracts with the Alliance Defending Freedom, who is representing pro bono. But I know the borough has appropriated money for their defense. And we have a record. Shayla Farzan gave out information she got from the borough a few months ago that as of February that $18,000 had been spent. But can we talk a little bit about the money that's been appropriated by the borough for defense?
Sure. The mayor requested and the assembly approved an appropriation of $50,000 for defense of the lawsuit. Even though the Alliance Defending Freedom has indicated that they're providing pro bono services, there still are expenses. The expenses that have been reported from requests for information from the media, somewhere up over $20,000 right now. The Alliance Defending Freedom is one law firm that's defending us. The other law firm is Brennan Bell and Clarkson, and the attorney in that law firm, Kevin Clarkson, has a different contract with the borough to provide services at $425 an hour. Some of that invoiced charges, some of has been reimbursed by the Alliance Defending Freedom, but apparently there's some sort of agreement between those two law firms that some of the expenses will be reimbursed, but not all, and we don't know how much will be reimbursed or for what reasons it's reimbursed. So we are incurring expenses, and $50,000 has been appropriated so far.
And I will finish up my December notes. December is also when the case was in federal court. The ACLU included Elise Boyer in its suit at that time, and then the case was remanded to state court at that time. But before we move on to 2017, Diana on the line. Diana, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead. Thanks. Well, thanks for calling.
Yes. First of all, I'd like to thank Willie Dunn for his participation in this issue because I think it's a very important one. I hadn't heard of Last Frontier Freethinkers, but I gather that it meets the requirement of regular meetings for religious purposes. And that's fine. I'm happy to have freethinkers represented. It does, however, still include the requirement of the group having religious purposes. And as a non-religious person, I still feel that the policy as written by the Assembly is discriminatory against non-believers. And that is contrary, as stated before, to both the Alaska Constitution and the U.S. Constitution.
Willie, do you have any response to that? If you could turn down your radio, Diana, it would help on the feedback.
Yes.
Thank you.
I will.
Yes, I agree with the caller completely. And just to reiterate, I have opposed the policy from the start. My timeline actually started when I was first elected. I had people right off the bat asking if I could submit an ordinance to do away with the invocations. Some people were offended by them. Some people thought they were unnecessary. Many people thought that they did not represent the variety of religious beliefs or non-beliefs, as people point out. So, I have opposed the policy since the beginning and have supported eliminating them, but until there's a majority of the Assembly does that or the courts tell us to change the policy, we're stuck with it.
Diana, thanks for calling. Does that answer or address your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much again for your KBBI and to Willie Dunn.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
Next on the line, one more before we try and address January's timeline. Finley,
hello.
Do you read?
Yeah.
Welcome back to the coffee table, Finley. It's been a long time.
Thank you. Welcome back. Thank you, Willie. Thank you, John McKay. I think that it's never going to be fair choosing somebody to do an invocation, and just there should be no invocation. And that's simply the way it could be constitutional. Now, the contract with a religious group seems like a violation of the separation of church and state in itself, and that they could perhaps go for summary judgment because it's just a matter of law and the facts aren't really disputed, I think. And then the last thing is, it seems like the borough officials who negotiated that contract engaged in improper behavior. So thanks a lot.
Thank you, Finley.
Bye.
I'm going to get through this timeline. We are in January. Three members of the assembly left the borough assembly in January. And I don't mean to indicate that they left over these suits. Brandy Holmdahl, she left because she got a job in Boston. Ken Carpenter is now in what was her seat. Blaine Gilman left because he moved out of his district. And now Jill Schaefer is sitting in that seat. And Gary Knopp has a seat on the legislature now, in the state legislature. And so now Brett Hibbert is in his seat. So January comes and there is a whole fresh set. There are three more, and there are elections coming up as well. Is that correct?
That's right. This October, there will be five assembly seats up for election, and also mayor will be getting a new mayor since Mayor Navarro will have served two terms, and he will not be allowed to run again.
Term limits.
We did have a turnover on the assembly, very unusual. It was one of the reasons I decided to bring the issue up again.
That brings us to February.
To give the new assembly members an opportunity to chime in on the issue.
Okay, and there is another caller on the line. Steve, are you there?
Yeah. Hi, Kathleen. This is Steve Gibson.
Go ahead.
I just want to say that I do completely agree with and sympathize and see the truth of Willie Dunn's point of view. My question centers around the story about a few-year-old case in upstate New York decided by, I think, the circuit court there that seemed to me that it had very similar shape to this case. And I wonder if either Willie and the judgment was against the people that hold Willie's position.
Do you have any names in that case or anything to?
I think the attorney will be well apprised.
Yeah, I'm getting the high sign from Assemblymember Dunn that he understands what you're referring to.
I bet he does. So both Willie and the attorneys in the case, opinions, if you have enough time to give it a little bit of air, would be really interesting there, because it seems to me it's something to have a lot of caution about or concern about. And it is a different district than, or a different circuit than the Ninth Circuit, but I understand this isn't federal now, this is state, so that's a whole different ballgame.
Well,
but anyway, yeah,
well,
your
let's
thought.
See if I can turn it over to these guys. Thank you so much for your question.
You bet, thank you.
Mr. McKay, are you on the line?
I am. I think what I'm going to do is mainly defer to Willie here, but I believe what the gentleman is referring to is a case called the Town of Greece case, which, yes, was a case that came up on the East Coast, but in fact it went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Right. Alito wrote the opinion for it, and the dissent was written by Kagan. I'm looking at that as myself.
Right.
So you go ahead.
It applies everywhere in the country, and the question in this case, I think, is how it applies the circumstances of the Kenai Burroughs policy, and I think that's what the two sides are arguing about in the Hunt case. I'm only that's something you have very able lawyers on both sides of that case who are knowledgeable about the religious invocation issue, and as is Mr. Dunn. So I'll leave that to him to talk about the Town of Greece case and why he thinks this is different and why they're arguing that this is a different situation. My involvement in this has been limited to saying that Mr. Dunn has a right and other assembly members to speak about this issue, I think the law firm that is representing the borough in this case, as I understand it, also represented the city in that case that the caller is referring to. And so my only question is why they need to have a contract that tries to keep people from talking about what they're litigating. So I'll leave it to Mr. Dunn to explain a bit more about why the Kenai policy may be different from what the court decided in the Town of Greece case.
Oh, thank you for making that distinction. And Willie?
Sure. And thanks for the call, Steve. I remember very shortly after I was elected, I went to pick up some lumber from Steve and Ben out at the lumber yard there and sat talking about this very issue, well over a year ago. The court case referred to there is a U.S. Supreme Court case, Greece versus Galloway, and in that decision, the Supreme Court decided that prayer at legislative meetings was acceptable. However, there were guidelines placed on that, and I think what we're looking at the borough here, despite the attempt to craft our existing policy that would align with Greece versus Galloway, there still seems to be some unreasonable restrictions on who can and who cannot give an invocation. The state of Alaska, state legislature does have invocations. Sometimes they are prayers, sometimes not at the beginning of their floor sessions. And they have a policy that that does mesh with the Greece versus Galloway Supreme Court decision. So I guess it's up to the courts to decide. But I'm not a lawyer, but I am familiar with the case. And so legislative prayer or prayer at the beginning of legislative sessions is allowed, but it's a question of
The
restrictions on who can and cannot. And I believe that, every citizen of the borough should be allowed to speak to the borough and give an invocation.
Thank you for your call, Steve. There is another caller on the line. Art, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead, Art.
So I have a two-part question. One, it's difficult for all of us, many of us, to drive to wherever the assembly meeting is in order to give an invocation. Can that be phoned in? And two, can anyone who belongs, I guess it's three-part. So does a qualifying organization have to apply to be approved, and does that have to, whoever gives the invocation, does that have to be a minister or pastor, or even do they have to be certified by that group to give the invocation, or can any of us who happen to belong to an approvable organization do that on our own?
Okay, well, Willie has the procedure written out right in or printed from the borough right in front of him, so I'm going to ask him to go ahead and address that.
Great question, Art. Thank you. The policy includes an application, so you have to apply either online or with a written application to the borough clerk, and the assembly president decides whether the application is approved or denied. And the question of whether it could be done by telephone is a very interesting question over call-in line. So I don't know as if that's been proposed or decided on, but it might be worthy of looking into that. The policy says that an appointed representative from the association list can give the invocation. So first, the association has to be approved by the assembly president, and then an appointed representative from that association can apply to give a specific invocation at a specific date.
Okay, so the Freethinkers appointed you to give the invocation.
That's correct.
So if we jump all those hoops and drive up to Kenai or wherever you're doing the... we might invoke a moment of silence?
Well, I think the first thing that would have to happen is that you and the group that you wish to represent would have to petition the borough to get on the authorized list.
Yeah, I'm saying we jump all those hoops, then nothing would keep us from invoking a moment of silence.
I suspect if that's your invocation, then that's your invocation.
That's correct. There's no restrictions on what the invocation, what a person giving the invocation says. It there's no prior inquiry. Absolutely. And you know, I actually considered doing that. I chose the route of a secular invocation, asking the assembly members to use evidence-based decision-making.
And do you feel like that really addressed your question, Art?
Yeah, I do. The silence is a part of many religious and spiritual traditions and secular traditions of just taking a breath and taking a moment.
Right. I mean, a Quaker invocation would almost necessarily be a silent invocation.
You could say that. So I'm a Quaker, but I won't take issue with
you. Okay. Well, that's all right. Yeah, feel free to take issue with that because you're the expert. I do want to thank you for calling.
Thanks.
We have reached the end of the coffee table. John McKay, if you're still on the line, are you there?
I am.
Thank you so much for calling in today. We really appreciate your participation.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having the show.
And Assemblymember Willie Dunn, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Kathleen. And, you know, I would really hope that I could be back on the coffee table another day to talk about very important issues facing the borough, like schools, education, roads, and our finances.
In upcoming weeks, our hope is to address the Hillcorp closures and safety and environmental regulations in Cook Inlet. Also, the recall of Homer City Council members will be on our list as well. Thank you for joining us on the coffee table. You are tuned to KBBI AM 890. Homer, good morning.